0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Lifeline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And I want to go straight to Sarah now. Sarah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Sarah, it's a very big day for you and your family there.
Yeah, for us, yeah.
Explain what you're in the middle of doing right now.
Well, both my husband and I were originally from Cork. We've been living in Dublin for a long number of years. We had our first little boy a year and a half ago, and we've made the decision to move our family back home to Cork to be closer to supports and back home to the real capital.
To the real capital. Okay. I know you're in the middle of packing up today, actually, aren't you?
Yeah, today's my last day in my current job, yeah.
Oh. So that all sounds great, and I am sure you are delighted and looking forward to it, but you have hit a bump in the road.
We have, yeah. So, I mean, everything was falling into place very much for us with jobs and everything. We were very, very lucky. The day my husband got his job offer in his hand, the first thing we did was we decided to ring for creche places for our son. So that day I sat down with a list of 15 different creches in front of me, and I rang every single one of them. And the best offer that I was given for a child care place for my son was that he was number 80 on the wait list for 2026.
80 on the wait list.
80
for 2026.
Yeah. Yes, and that was the best offer. There was an awful lot of the creches don't even have wait list open anymore, because they were telling me there's so many people on the list that they didn't think it was ethical to even tell people there was a wait list anymore.
So I'm sure after the first two or three, you were thinking, oh my God, this is taking longer than yeah. I thought. But after 15...
Yeah, you really start to panic a little bit,
when
you're
imagine.
In that position. Now, obviously, we're in Dublin at the moment, and we were very aware that the situation is also very, very bad here. When I found out I was pregnant with my son at only 4 weeks, I was ringing creches to try and make sure that I could get a creche place for 6 months, which was our plan, not suited our family, which is obviously very difficult for people. You know, if people have a history of child loss or anything like that, that's a particularly difficult thing to ask people to do.
I know, that is so early, 4 weeks into a pregnancy. You barely know you're pregnant.
Oh, no, actually, I was ringing creches telling them I was expecting, you know, it's a very weird situation.
We're having a little bit of dropout on your line, Sarah, but it sounds pretty good. We'll stick with it. So you did find a creche place while you were in Dublin, obviously.
We did. We were lucky enough to get something relatively close to home, probably because I rang so early. I know I have colleagues and friends looking for creche places who haven't been so lucky in the Dublin area. Mm.
So what are you going to do now? You are, as you say, this is your last day at work. This is your last day packing up.
Yeah.
What's the plan now with your son?
The plan with our son is we've been at least fortunate enough to get a childminder for May, which we're very delighted about, and it's great. But obviously, my son, he's very social. He loves the creche environment that he's in at the moment. It really seems to suit his personality. We love the flexibility of it. That, you know, if somebody is ill who's in his room taking care of him, that there's an extra staff member there. You know, we don't have to take holidays when a childminder is taking holidays, etc. And they have, you know, excellent developmental supports and kind of age-appropriate toys, etc. in the rooms. It's an environment that we're very happy for our son to be in. So it's a bit of a disappointment to us that it's not a route that we could go down in Cork. It just wasn't an option for us, which we found very frustrating for that reason, but also for financial reasons as well. The National Child Care Scheme and the ECC schemes largely support the creches, but it's nigh on impossible to get a childminder who'll allow you to avail of those government supports. So the cost per month is far, far higher for us moving to a childminder compared to the
creche. Oh, yeah. And I think a childminder can maybe work if you have two or more children. That would be also very expensive in a creche. But for one child, a childminder, that's a very, very expensive option, obviously.
Yeah, it is. It is a huge cost, yeah.
And as you say, it's the idea as well about wanting your child to be socialised, because that's what we're hearing
exactly.
Since COVID. A lot of children didn't get socialised, and that, that there's this whole generation of toddlers who you know only saw adults over that period. And you as you say, you want your child to have that experience.
Absolutely. And I mean, he certainly loves that. And I it's one of the things that I'm most grateful that we were able to give him as a gift, actually, is he started creche so early and it was a huge advantage. Everybody comments when they, you know, they meet him for the first time, how comfortable he is with new people, how good he is with other children. It's fantastic. It's been fantastic, I think.
I think somebody might be trying to call you there because there's a slight dropout. If anyone's trying to call Sarah, please hold off until she's finished with Lifeline. Sarah, tell me, what was the draw to go back? Is your husband Cork as well, or are you dragging him to somewhere?
No, there's no dragging. It's very mutual. We're both from Cork originally.
And was it always the plan?
We both have family down there.
Was it always the plan to go back?
Honestly, it wasn't always the plan. You know, we had jobs here that we love. Certainly, I have a job here that I absolutely love, and it's hard to leave. But just the draw of family support and making sure that our son was growing up somewhere that we know very well and close to family was really, really important to us. And when he came along, just kind of shifted a little bit.
And of course, you didn't want your son growing up shouting for Dublin.
Oh, well, this is it. We have to get him in a Munster jersey. That's very, very important. You can ask his granddad.
These are the things people may laugh, but these are the things that you, when you think about it, it's when you have children, you actually think very much, don't you, about, you know, where you want to, where your family is going to be from, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And we think it is, you know, despite the issue we've had around childcare, it's really important to us and we're glad we're making the move. But it's just really highlighted to us because obviously, you know, a lot of people in my generation would be kind of thinking at this point about coming home, having lived abroad or, you know, in Dublin or elsewhere for a long number of years. And, you know, everybody talks about, oh, you're coming home. Are you going to be able to find a house? That's the housing crisis is what people have kind of brought up to us most. And a lot of people weren't even aware that the childcare situation was quite as bad as we found it to be.
Yeah, well, I saw just this week, just yesterday, there was a report that 30 creches, childcare services catering for more than 900 children have told parents over the past fortnight that they are going to close. So yeah. That is... that's just gives you an idea of the kind of constraints. I mean, if that's 900 more children now that are going on wait lists.
Yeah, it's shocking. And I will say when I was ringing the creches in around the Cork area, trying to find a place for my son, I really felt very sorry for them because that was the message they were giving me, that they don't have support. You know, they were really apologetic that they didn't have a spot for my son. They were absolutely lovely. I had people sat on the phone with me going through lists of other places that I could potentially try and trying to help me so much. They're salt of the earth, amazing people. And I'm sure they're having a hard time with being inundated, essentially, with calls, which is what they were kind of suggesting, of parents like us ringing and begging, essentially, for somebody to look after our children for us to allow us to go back to work.
We have a statement here from the Department of Children, and it kind of goes against what we're talking about. They're saying, and I know this, the government have been crowing really about how much they've done for the childcare sector. They're saying that in 2024, the government will invest more money than ever in early learning. The total will be 1.1 billion euro. And of course, this comes back to this new method of core funding that... you know, some creches have issues with. But they say that since the introduction of core funding, the number of early learning centre service closures have reduced by 18%. They said they're now at a five-year low. And they're saying that the overall figures show an increase of 129 services in 2023. If that is the case, it's very hard to understand, looking at those figures, the situation that you're describing, Sarah.
Yeah, no, it certainly doesn't match what we're seeing on the ground as parents when we go and try and find a spot for our child. The creches are saying they don't have the supports and certainly we don't have enough places. It's a huge issue.
And as you say, it's not just yourselves. You know this from other parents in similar situations.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It's a point of, you know, I was speaking at an event for mothers to be who are working in my area. And the big point that came up over and over again when we were having that group discussion was, what am I going to do about children who don't have childcare? I'm supposed to go back to work at 6 months. That's what my support, my maternity support, goes for. And most of the creches won't take them from 6 months, because the national supports tend to go from 1 year. So there's an inherent issue there to start with. And there seems to be mass panic, essentially, among mothers and fathers looking to try and get into the workforce after having kids. It's not the kind of environment we really should be offering up to people.
Yeah, I suppose the issue is there are so many people in work now that just the demands on those services are so, so huge. How are you feeling today, though, Sarah? I know it's a big day that you've been planning this for a long time, and you're now at the point where you're going to be leaving.
I'm very emotional, honestly, about the big life change, but we're very excited, and we're excited to see what's going to come for us in the next few months. It's extremely exciting, if a little bit terrifying.
Definitely. It's definitely any big change like that is, but you're sure you're doing the right thing anyway?
Absolutely certain. Yeah, absolutely certain. It's the right thing for our family, yeah.
Sarah, would you hang on? I want to bring in... Marguerite. Marguerite, good afternoon.
Hi, how you doing?
You have found a place for your child, but only for part-time.
I gave birth back in 2022. My son he's nearly two now. I had to give up my job of 7 years to look after Luke full-time. I was on Joe Duffy, I was actually talking to Joe, and I was interviewed by Sharon Lynch on RT. I fought hard, and I fought really hard. It was soul-destroying that I couldn't provide childcare for my son.
And what was the problem? What were you told at the time, Marguerite? What was
I was finished maternity, and I didn't think I thought getting childcare would be fairly okay, you know? So when I went looking, when Luke was 9 months, I went looking because I want to get work, go back to work. So every creche I rang, they told me that there was no space available, that I should have applied for childcare when I found out I was pregnant.
Yeah, like Sarah
that
did.
Was,
yeah.
That was what I was told. I went to the Federation. I went to the National Childcare Committee. I went to RT. I did it all. I registered on nearly every creche in Waterford City and County. I registered in Kilkenny and in Wexford because I drive, and I said, that's it, I'll just drive. And I could not get a place anywhere. And I went to TDs, and what you read out on live there that came from the government, that was the same information that I was given when Luke was 12 months old. And I was like, what? When you just read it out, they just basically gave you the same jargon again that they gave Sarah. It's unbelievable. I'm actually quite shocked that that's still being used as an excuse. There is no childcare facilities available. I was in for creche. I was told to go down the route of private child minding, and that was actually more money than I was earning. So it was completely pointless. And then to make matters worse, when the maternity is up, you're expected to go back to work, and then you're left on social welfare. And I've always worked, and the loss of money is huge, huge loss of money. And now I'm on social welfare still because I managed to get three half day part time creche, which was by the skin of my teeth. I got that.
So, I think we've lost Marguerite there. Sarah, Marguerite's story there.
Resonates so much with me. It's such a stressful time anyway, you know, and the last thing you want to be doing is putting stress on new moms or expectant moms who are going through a huge life change anyway, to try and kind of say you should have done it earlier or you didn't do it right. It's not very sensitive.
Should we be putting labels on pregnancy tests and say, by the way, if this is positive, call your local creche, because if you don't, it might be too late. I mean, to say to somebody you should have, you know, it's It's and I'm wondering as well, is there parts of the country? I mean, obviously that's the southeast where Marguerite was looking. You're down in Cork. I wonder, and obviously we know Dublin has been this has been a difficulty in Dublin for many years now. But it does seem to have, you know, stretched out around the country now. Have we got Marguerite back? Marguerite.
Hi. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. I got cut off. But as I was saying to you guys, I mean, the government staff giving Sarah the same line as what they gave me when Luke was 9 months, 9 to 12 months. And I'm actually really shocked because all of that is complete lies. Because the poor creches are seriously under serious pressure.
Okay, I don't know if we can say this pure lies now because they are citing actual figures. The overall figures show an increase of 129 services.
Which county are they starting? Which county are they starting?
That's a national. They're national figures.
Well, I think I'm registered on all the creches in Waterford, and I really am, and I'm registered in Kilkenny and Wexford, and I couldn't get them. And I know that I was 117 on a list in one creche in Waterford, and that was only the closest I could guess. The other ones were I was 304, I was 400 and something on another creche. So there must be a county in Ireland that actually has childcare available. So I'd love to know which county that is.
It is baffling, I have to say, when you look at those figures and then you hear your story and Sarah's story. And you know, I've heard so many other stories covering this issue over the last number of years. Where are all these places going if there's an increase of 129 services in 2023?
I'd like to know where they have them listed, because I was talking to the Federation and the Childcare Committee in Waterford, and that's the Munster area, and they have nothing. So I'd love to know where they're stating that these creches exist.
We would too, actually. Maybe if we'd see if we can get any more information on that, because they're the figures we've been given. I mean, we can't argue with them. I'm presuming they didn't make them up.
Definitely not accurate anyway, definitely not. And the Federation and the Childcare Committee would confirm on that, especially in Waterford and Cork and Wexford and Kilkenny. I guarantee that they would disagree with that.
Yeah, I see there, just in that newspaper report this week about the 30 creches that are saying they're going to close in the last couple of weeks. They're also saying that this is the Federation of Early Childcare Providers. They're saying that this 30 ones that are now going to close, that this was in addition to over 130 independent childcare closures in the year since March 2023, which it said affected around over 4,290 children. None of this is adding up. I don't understand if there's that many independent childcare places closing down that the government are telling us that there has been an increase of over 100 services in 2023. Let me take a break. Let me take a break and I'll come back to you, Marguerite.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking to Sarah and Marguerite about the desperate search for childcare places, for creche places for children at the moment. Sarah, I'm going to let you go because I know this is a very, very busy day for you and your family. The very best of luck with the move.
Thank you so much. And thanks for discussing this really important issue. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I do think, you know, and it has often occurred to me that childcare is one of those issues that it's hugely important to you for the first 4 years of your, 5 years of your child's life. It's kind of marginally important then for after school places, and then it no longer becomes important. And I think it's because of that, maybe it doesn't get the priority because it's only important to a certain section at any given time.
I know, but it's very important to those people.
Well, it's very important to the whole country, actually, because it's very important that our children are minded in the right circumstances and that people have options when it comes to going back to work. So thank you. Thank you for raising it, Sarah. I'll let you go. Marguerite, I'll keep you there because I want to go to Adele, who's on another line. Adele, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Adele. Where do you stand on this?
OK, so I am a self-employed childminder. I run my own childminding service from my own home. And I don't think enough people are aware of the fact of what's coming down the line for childminders in this country. In September of 2028, every single childminder in the country is going to be systematically forced into registering with TUSLA. Now, we don't have a problem with regulation. We don't have a problem with registration. In fact, many of us welcome it, because there seems to be a thought process out there that everything we do is cash in hand, that we don't pay our taxes, that, you know, the children are stuck in front of the television for the day and we do our own thing, which is 100% couldn't be further removed from the truth.
How many children, Edel, do you have at the moment?
I have three children.
You have three, you're minding three children?
True, yes.
And that would be, I think a lot of parents would like that kind of a setup, you know, a smaller setup, more personal maybe than the big, larger creches.
100%, yes. Yeah, so a lot of parents do opt for a smaller home-from-home environment, which is what a childminder provides. But as I said, we are being forced into Tusla registration, which we are fine with it. However, Tusla have copied and pasted the guidelines that are, or I should say the regulations that are in place for larger institutional care, and handed them over to us and said, there you go, there's your childminding regulations. So essentially what Tusla are asking us to do is to turn our homes into creches, which is not feasible and it's not safe. One of the major issues that I want to highlight here is that they are asking childminders who, bear in mind, work solo in their own homes. They want us to give our full names, our home addresses, our contact details and the age profile of the children in our care. And they want that to be put on a live register, which will be accessible to the entire world. So I'm being asked to hold my hand up and say, here I am, I'm Edel. Here's my home address. I'm currently here on my own, minding three toddlers. Come get us. The predators of the world are going to, you know, they're going to love this. They're going to be very, very grateful to Irish Childminders.
So just to be clear, Edel, you have no issue having that information on a record, but you say it should not be publicly available.
100% not a family home. A creche is a different thing, because in a creche there are several staff members. A creche is a business.
But is there other issues as well in terms of, like, because creches, obviously there's fire regulations, there's all sorts of you know, other regulations that are specific to creches. But like, what else would you have to do to change how you're
the safety elements we don't mind too much. I mean, a home needs to be safe. We don't mind that too much. There is another regulation saying that we need to control the food that the children eat. We need to have 100% control of the food that the children eat, which means we need to provide a menu. They're looking for a 3-week rolling menu with different meals, snacks, lunches, dinners, whatever the childminder is providing. And that we are not allowed to move away from that menu. So if on any given day one child decides, I don't like pasta, and I know this child is a fussy eater, and I know that if I make something different for this child, that this child is going to eat it, I am then no longer compliant because I'm altering what's on the menu. We can ask the parents to send the food in, but if we ask the parents to send the food in, we are then told that we need to police the food that comes into our homes, that we need to open up each and every lunchbox and search through each and every lunchbox. I'm hearing stories of homemade healthy scones being sent home because they're told it's cake and no cake is allowed. So literally policing everything that a child eats, even though it's the parents choosing to send these in, this is what we're being asked to do.
Okay.
Well, the use of buggies for sleeps isn't allowed. Now, I would often, on a sunny day like today, we would pack up a picnic lunch and we would head up to the local park. We'd have a picnic lunch, the older children would play, and when the baby gets tired, the baby would have his nap in the buggy. That means now, if the baby falls asleep in the buggy, I am no longer Tusla compliant, because the children aren't allowed to fall asleep in buggies.
Yeah, and you can see in all of these things, you can see the reasoning behind them. But as you say, once they become absolute hard and fast rules, that becomes problematic for a setup like the one you have there, Edel. Thanks for that. There's loads of calls coming in on this, so I need to get to a couple of more. I'll bring in Claire now. Claire, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You have a creche yourself.
Yes.
Where are you based, Claire?
We're based in Innes in County Clare, and I was just actually en route to the after school, and I heard Marguerite and the lady previous who was moving from who was in Cork and Dublin looking for childcare, And it just resonated because we are in the exact same situation in Innes. We have no spaces for children under 3 years. And we have parents ringing every day looking for places for children under 3 years. Over three, it gets a little bit easier. The ratios relax and we can provide places. But at the moment, yeah, there is a chronic shortage. And it's affecting parents. It's affecting the creches themselves because we have families who come to us who we want to offer a place with siblings, families who've been with us for years, and we just don't have the availability. And it's causing so much stress for us and for the parents. There's a lot of strife at the moment.
I just see another text in there. This text says, I told my first son's creche that I was pregnant with my second child when I was 4 months pregnant, and the earliest place they can give my baby is 18 months old. So we'll have to organise mm-hmm. childcare until then for me to be able to go back to work. We will manage, yeah. And our creche is excellent. And this listener is in the rural west of Ireland. So what do we, when the government is then telling us, the Department of Children is telling us that actually, you know, everything is hunky-dory and that there is actually, you know, an increase in services available in 2023. Do you recognise that picture, Claire?
I don't recognise the increase in services. Now, saying that here in Innes, in this area, I don't see a huge decrease in services, but there is no services coming online, especially full daycare. There are very, very few full daycare services. I haven't heard of a new creche opening in the Innes area in I would say maybe 8 to 10 years. And obviously there has to be a reason behind that. the reason behind that is funding and the huge administration burden that is put on creches. Also, for us, in our situation, we have capped our fees from 2017-2018 rates. We did that as an agreement to be able to opt into core funding, which is the new government funding programme, which is it's a great step in the right direction. And I think ultimately and eventually it will work. But at the moment, it's just on the first steps and we are being strangled because we have capped our fees at 2017-2018 rates. Our obligations to our staff have increased. We have a new ERO, which is excellent, and it's what we've always wanted. We want to retain our staff. We want to educate, have a good quality degree-led workforce, and we're getting that. But the providers themselves, we have to pay for it. The funding is going towards paying our staff, which is great, and it's going directly to the parents, which for the first time about 2 or 3 years ago, there was a really decent subsidy, and it is a decent subsidy, and parents are benefiting from that, but only if they can get a place in a regulated facility. And in the last few years, that's what's caused the huge, huge influx of demand of childcare in regulated creches, because a lot of people were in childminders, and that's fine, but it's not a regulated service.
Yeah, so of course, this makes total sense, Claire. That's why a lot of people, as I say, people maybe would have thought a neighbour minding 2 or 3 kids with their own child, that was an option for a lot of people. But of course, you don't get the subsidy. So that's why the creches have come under massive pressure.
Yes. And because there is a cap on their fees. Now, I mean, I can say here, our fees here in Innes, I'm on the lower average, the €175 a week. It's very low, and we have to provide the exact same service as what we would if our fees back 4 or 5 or 6 years ago had been €230 a week. We're capped at that, and it's strangling services, especially services outside of the main cities, because our fees were not that high. You know, we were managing, but because of the introduction of new ratios in school-age childcare as well, where often places would have subsidised their full daycare facilities because they could, the ratios are wider. I know I'm getting very technical now, but the ratios were wider in school age. Yeah. So we could keep our fees a little bit lower because we were able to provide, offer care for more children for less staff in school age facilities. That has become regulated, and that's also contributed to our our costs going through the roof. On top of the huge, huge increase in the cost of living that happened after COVID.
Well, that was, I was just going to say, if you're charging 2017 prices and you're living in 2024 cost of living scenario, it's going to be an issue. But Claire, are you going to be able to keep going? Like, you're not saying that you're under pressure there?
We've been running for 25 years. So we had our facilities, thankfully, for the last, for a long time. We're not paying huge rents. We're not, you know, we're established. Our staff have been with us for a long time. But for somebody who was thinking of coming into the childcare to build a creche, I mean, the costs are enormous. The cost of the buildings, the cost of the quality to put in place the standards, the policies, the protocols, to align yourself with three or four different regulatory bodies, which are TUSLA, the Department of Education, the Department of Health, the Department of Environmental Health, PUBL, which is the regulatory body who administer the different fees, different subsidies. It is, I mean, we're just, the pressure that is going, the amount of admin is mind-boggling. And it's like as if the care of the child is secondary. Now, I know that's an old cliche, everybody says, but sometimes the staff are leaving the sector not because of the pressure of minding children. It's the pressure of keeping on top of admin and paperwork, which has to be presented for on-the-spot inspections, might I say. Not, you know, notified inspections. These are on-the-spot, door-stopping inspections, two or three, maybe a year. There's a lot going on. And then on top of that, we just don't have the spaces now at the moment because parents are under so much pressure. And when they ring, it's like, oh, I could have a recorded message saying, I'm so sorry, we don't have any places. Our waiting list is 30 children long. But maybe when your child is 3 years of age, we may be able to look after you.
And I imagine sometimes parents must take that very bad. I mean,
because they're desperate. You know, they're desperate, and we do our best. And like that, one of the mums said earlier, we ring other places for them. We all here in a small community like Innes, we all, you know, most of us know each other, so we'll ring. But we know. I mean, at this stage, we know that everybody's in the same situation. But there is, there's a lot of stress out there, and because parents then are going to childminders. The childminders can't avail of the
subsidy.
So parents are paying eye-watering amounts of money. But in that, and I mean, I'm not saying that all childminders do, but childminders are charging up to 200, 220 for a full week, you know, for full care. We charge 175 and we're being put through the ringer for regulation. So, you know, going on.
And we just heard from Adele there saying that she's worried about the regulations coming down the track for the childminder sector, you know, the non-creche childminders. And that's going to put more pressure on the whole sector, obviously, when that comes up. Claire, hang on, will you? I need to take another break, but we're going to stay talking about this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking about the shortage of creche places around the country. And just something that Claire was explaining to me there, Marguerite, that strikes me as that's the problem we have here, is that the new funding model incentivizes parents to have their children in creches in these regulated centres. And it is the move away from the more sort of, you know, cash in hand services and childminder services that aren't now supported by the new funding model, that's why we're seeing such a pressure on creches. Could that be it?
I don't know. I mean, if that was the case, it shouldn't have been resolved by now. I mean, it's gone on quite some time, if that's the case. You know, I gave birth to Lucan in 2022, you know, and I got the same line that Sarah got, the very same line. It was actually copy and paste scenario again. So it can't be the same information every time. It can't be the same thing all the time. It can't be using that as an excuse, you know.
But I suppose it does make sense, though, if you incentivise and give subsidies to parents who are putting their children in these regulated creche
my reality of it is that I couldn't afford private childminding. I could only afford creche, and the heartbreaking part of it was that the money aspect, I lost so much money when I couldn't get childcare and it's very hard to deal with. I've always worked, so social welfare is very low. So the cost of living is so high as well. So,
well, particularly
yeah, there is
Marguerite.
Sorry,
Margaret, I was just saying, particularly for yourself, when you're a single mother and you have all those other responsibilities, the last thing you want to be doing is not being able to pay
my way. I mean, the cost of living is huge. I mean, if that information that you're giving is accurate, then something needs to be done.
Indeed. Margaret. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
You're a childcare provider.
I'm delighted that parents are ringing up. We childcare providers have been talking about the childcare crisis for the last few years, and the government haven't been listening to us. But now we knew this was coming on. But now that parents are really feeling the impact, we have stopped taking the calls. One of the other providers talking said you need a recorded message on your phone. We're not taking anybody for 2024 and possibly 2025. I'm in North County Dublin, one of the biggest expanding areas. I don't see any new crashes that the government are talking about, but I do know of one that closed down just a couple of weeks ago, full day care. So we don't know where these new crashes are. I see the government are really putting onus on trying to get childminders to register themselves. The government will look after childminders if they do, but the reason that the government are doing this is that they know that the crisis that we have, that there are no places available for most couples with a mortgage. It needs both of them to go out to work, and for them to go out to work, if they have children, they need a crash. My grandson, they're paying. He's a childminder, is charging €80 a day. And for a place in my creche for that same age child, it's €32 a day.
She's €80 a day.
€80 a day. Now, she's absolutely fantastic. They couldn't get him into a creche, but they're paying €80 a day to a childminder.
Is that five days a week?
No, they've just worked it, so it's 3 days a week. And the childminder is absolutely fantastic. She's really, really gorgeous. But that's crippling them.
But I was going to say, I mean, a childminder has to pay their bills as well, you know, and it is a very, very responsible job.
Absolutely.
But parents really, you're over a barrel, really, if you're a parent in this situation.
And they were over a barrel for them to keep their jobs, they had to pay this. They couldn't get, there's no creche for them until 2025 in their area. Again, in North County Dublin, the big area. And I see Idelle is talking about the regulations that are going to come down. We know all about the rolling menus. You have to provide the same food to the children. You can't adapt, you can't have them sleep in a buggy. We understand all of that. But the government also talk about a home-and-home atmosphere, and they're taking that away, not only from childminders, but they're taking that home and from home environment away from creches, because in order to keep a business going, a viable business going, you have to grow. It has to be big. The big chains are doing very, very well. They were able to, for some reason, when I look at what they're charging, you know, in our area, it's from 250 to 280 a week, where I'm charging 162 to 200 a week. And I'm capped at that. I cannot do anything unless I pull out of core funding.
And on that capping, Mary, because Claire had that issue as well, they were capped at 2017. Was that the year everyone, whatever you were charging that year, was the year it had to stay at?
It had to stay at that. It had to stay at 2020 fees, whatever you were. But remember, around that time, we had a mini recession. So we didn't put our fees up. So I hadn't put, I was being kind to my parents. So I didn't put my fees up from 2017, and I was going to do it in 2020, and then COVID hit, And the government were very good to us during COVID. They really did look after us because we were one of the first businesses that were hit, but we also had to go back to work to care for people that were working, frontline workers. So we were closed for 3 months and then we all opened up again. Sorry, the other thing I'd love to say to the parents, because it's really good that you're getting the parents on board here. Just to remind every parent that has a child going to school in September, they are going to be losing out on the $64.50 that we get a week from the government for ECC that we deduct from the fees. So we lose that. So they lose that. So I urge all the parents.
Why are we losing? Why are parents losing that? Or why are you losing that?
Because get ECC money for the 38 weeks of the of the year that children are go to their ECC once they're 3 years of age. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they're in the ECC. We get $64.50 from the government that we take from the fees, from the parents' fees. But when they start school, they lose that. So I'm sending notes to my parents now, the ones that are leaving school, telling them what's going to happen. Their fees are going to jump significantly when they lose their ECC funding. And then they go into school and the government give you NCS, which every child, every parent that's working is entitled to at least 140 an hour. But we don't charge hourly rates to the children in our care. We charge daily rates or part-time rates, you know, full day or part-time. But the government pay the NCS on an hourly rate. So if a granny wants to come and pick a child up on a Wednesday afternoon to bring the child to the park and to spend some time with them, those parents, the parents of that child, will lose that money. So we have parents sitting out in our car park until 6:30 at night because they are strapped for money. They need every cent that they get discount, you know, the funding. So they're sitting in their cars until after 6 o'clock.
They're leaving their children in care just in order to...
Just putting them in. They would say to me, what if I'm there at 7:30 in the morning and what if I pick up at 6:30 in the evening? I'd say, great. You'll have 11 hours childcare, at least 140. So they're getting a great discount. And some parents are really getting a great discount. But once those children, if they can get a place, but once those children start school, their fees go up considerably.
Okay.
And
okay.
That is another hit.
Okay, Mary, thanks for that. Hang on, I need to bring in Thomas. Thomas, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Thomas, you have an issue about creche workers.
Yeah, I just listened to some of the speakers there talking about trying to retain staff. It's hard to retain and recruit good staff when the paying conditions are just, they're not what they should be. Like they look for so much for degree staff, but we don't get paid nearly enough, the same as teachers do.
So you're working in the sector yourself, Thomas?
I do, yes.
And what level qualification would you need now to work in the sector?
So you need a minimum of, it was a FETAC level 5, I think it's QQI now, so a minimum level 5. And then your pay kind of depends if you're a room leader, then you kind of get that little bit more, a manager, deputy manager, but starting pay is €13 per hour.
Okay, so you would have put in years of study
be where you are. I have a level 7, so I did 3 years. Unfortunately, I didn't do the fourth year because my son came along in 2017.
Right.
So
you did 3 years. And do you mind telling me what you'd be on or what you could expect to be earning after that?
So as I have a level 7, I'm a lead educator. I get $15.50 per hour.
Right. So that's fairly good money for the sector.
It's better than what it was. It's a step in the right direction, but like, it's just not for the work we have to do and the job that we do and the role we play in Irish society. It's just not enough.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not suggesting it's a good one, but I'm saying in terms of what other people in the industry might be on, that's considered a reasonable wage within the sector in the way it is.
It would be reasonable, but for the work with that we do and the job that we do, I firmly believe it's not nearly enough.
I think a lot of people who are in this area of work do it because they really love working with children.
We do love our jobs. You know, the kids is what keep us going. They'll keep us there. But, like, you know, there's a cost of living crisis on. Groceries are out the roof. Electricity, everything is just so expensive now, and kind of it's getting to a stage where love just doesn't pay the bills anymore.
No, and of course, I was going to say that there is the other thing now, that there's a lot of options out there, other options, because we are in this full employment.
Well, yeah, we are, but then, you know, like, a lot of us love working with young children, nurturing young children from a very early age and seeing them kind of hit those milestones, like, you know. Sometimes we just see them grow right in front of us. Like, and see them go when they graduate play school, when they go off, even come to the big school, and we see them off in sixth class. It's rewarding. It's a great job, but it's getting to the stage now where it's just love just doesn't pay the bills.
No, and I imagine there isn't. It's a very female dominated sector as well, and that probably doesn't help, because we do find that sectors where it's mostly women who work, the wages aren't always that high.
No, like, we always talk about this great gender inequality when it comes to pay with men versus women, and like, this is just a prime example of it. So you have hardworking, qualified, brilliant women, and they just don't get the pay and the recognition and the respect that they deserve.
And I'm just looking, $15.50 an hour for 36 hours a week. I'm not going to try and do maths live on air, but it must be tight enough in the current climate, as you say, trying to meet the bills.
It's tight. You make it work. You kind of, you know, you chop and change bits and pieces, but you do your best to make it work.
You're going
I know.
But you're going to stick with it, Thomas. I can hear it in you. You're dedicated to what you're doing.
Well, you know, I love my job. Like, it's a job where, like, my son goes to the creche where I work, and it's great that I get to spend that time with him as well. You know, I think the poor child can't get a break from me, really. But I'm with Big Start as well. They're the early years union. We are fighting for better pay, better conditions, better terms. And, you know, I really want to stick with it and just hopefully see that change come to fruition.
Okay, Thomas, thank you for that. We have to take another break there.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we want to leave the issue of childcare places there and the stress around trying to find one for a moment now, because I want to go to Kevin. Kevin, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Kevin, you are a taxi driver.
I am.
Tell me what happened last Easter Sunday night.
Well, last Easter Sunday night, as you could imagine, on the bank holiday weekend, it was bedlam around the taxi rank here in Carlow. So we come up to the roundabout there at a potato market to get in to the taxi rank. We find out that the road is blocked by these boy racers. So after a while, they decided to move. What did they do? Well, they moved into the taxi rank, and they blocked the taxi rank. So then when they were asked to move from the taxi rank, first of all, they wouldn't move. They stayed there put. So in a while then, we got the finger from them, and this lad pulled out, and he turned back to me, and he says, "Why do you F off back to your own country?" And all we wanted to do was get in and do a bit of work. Move the people from the town, like, that's what we're there for.
And Kevin, I was just thinking as you were talking there how much I love your accent. Where is this from?
It's Leeds, Yorkshire.
And how long have you been here?
I've been in Carlow 30 years.
30
but
years?
My mother would originate from Roscarbery in Cork, and my father from French Park in County Roscommon.
All right.
So I've been coming over here since I was a young chap.
So to be told by a young lad to go back to where you came from, what did that feel like?
Well, it was a mixture, actually, because I was kind of laughing and kind of sad. Because, you know, you'd be saying that this is a country. I was brought up in an Irish community by Irish parents. I worked with Irish lads since I left school. And then I come over here, which I always wanted to live in Ireland. I come back and live in Ireland. And you told them to F off back to your own country, you know. And you turn around and you feel, you know, you're a bit saddened there. But then I'm laughing because I probably know more about the Irish than he did. Because I was brought up in it. I was brought up in the Irish environment, you know. Music, song, whatever. My father was actually a publican in Leeds for over 40 years.
Do you think, have you had any of that before, Kevin? The kind of an anti-English sentiment, say?
Up and down, but you take little notice of it. Like, I've had rebel songs sang at me, and the ones that were singing it to me only could muster one verse, yet I'd know the whole song. So you see, you kind of laugh at them that way. That's where the laugh comes in. Like, because I was listening to these songs since I was a nipper, you know. But it does. But I pity the foreign drivers that do be now in the taxi industry, because how would they feel?
And would there be foreign taxi drivers down your way there, Kevin?
Oh, there is. He is, and they're nice lads, and oh, they're lovely lads now, because they're very helpful to people. But you can imagine what they'd be getting.
Have you ever seen any fellow drivers getting abused there?
Oh, I've seen and I've heard it. But you see, the drivers, there's no point complaining. Go to your complaint too. You know, it seems to be a thing in the taxi industry that you take it, it's part of the job. It's like if you got assaulted, oh, well, you know, it comes with the job. But it shouldn't come with the job. It shouldn't come with any job.
And shouldn't come with any accent. You know, it should absolutely not be happening. Is it something that taxi drivers talk to each other about, that this kind of abuse?
Well, they do, but they just brush it off, like, you know. If they took it to heart, they won't be doing the job. They'd finish the packet in tomorrow. So you see, you've got to have a thick skin, I suppose, and you just get on with your job. Because the more you hear it, the more you shrug it off, the more you take no heed of it.
It just strikes me that you're such an unusual job, really, that literally the door of your car opens and you have no idea what's going to sit into the back seat or the passenger seat of your car.
You don't, and you don't know where you're going either. You know, you could be going to any part of Carlow, or you could be any part of Kildare or Wexford. You don't know where you're going, and you don't know who's in beside you.
Would you ever feel apprehensive when the door would open?
I'm lucky enough, I work for a good company now here in Carlow. So most of my work will be phone work. But if I'm stuck and going to the rank, what I do, I lock the doors, and I drive past the rank, and if I don't like what I see, I keep on going. And I'll come across a couple or a couple of young girls, and I'll pick them up, because I know then that they're going to be a better customers than what I've seen at the rank.
Do you feel have you over the years honed some good instincts about what people might be like just by looking at them?
You do. You kind of get a sixth instinct of what you see. And a lot of drivers do the same. I've seen drivers in front of me, they'll be pulling up and just to look across at the rank and they just keep on moving. And I do the same.
Now, I'm now feeling sorry for the person who maybe doesn't have a great look about them and gets passed over by taxi drivers, but maybe is the nicest person in the world.
Yeah, but you see, the thing about that is that you do get to know, in a town like Carlow, you do get to know who's who. And as I said, you don't know who, and you said yourself that you don't know who is getting into your car. Now, they can be great people and they can be the best in the world. But then again, if you're going out down to Bagnestown, say, and somebody does a runner on you, you're going to turn around, the next person who gets into the car, you're going to ask for the money first, or you don't go. And a lot of drivers won't go outside the town on the bank holiday weekend because of that. But then you can't paint everyone with the same brush, as you said. You know, you do feel sorry for ones, the genuine ones that want to get home. But this is what these people has brought on them. The ones that do the runners are the ones that won't pay. So, and it's the same with the abuse. Like, you know, you come down the road and you see somebody walking up the road and they look a bit rough. You cross over to the other side. Well, that's what taxi drivers do.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Do you have to be a people person, do you think? Or...
Well, I do. Well, I pick up people, and the first thing they do, like, you just mention my accent, and I say, yeah, I'm from Leeds. But then I explain where my mother came from, my father came from, and that I've been here 30 years, and you get a good repertoire with them, like, you get a good, and have a good crack with them, and you know, and a good laugh, like. You know, and they most of the people I pick up, I've got relations, I've had relations in Yorkshire, of England.
I have a memory of doing a program around an England Ireland football match, and just the kind of nationalism that kind of floats up with people around sporting events like that, and asking people, would you shout for England if they weren't playing Ireland, and a lot of people saying no, they could never of all the teams, they could never bring themselves to shout for England in any context. Who do you shout for?
I shout for England and I shout for Ireland, and all my nephews and nieces in Leeds shout for Ireland. They've all got the jerseys. My brother-in-law is from Mayo, and all these kids have got Mayo jerseys. On my side, my father's side, then you've got Roscommon jerseys, the other side, Cork jerseys. They all, like, you know, they're all full of Ireland. But I like, you take it up on the foot of a matter there. I know, I worked in the pubs in England myself. So maybe that's where I get the thick skin from, by dealing with the public, by working in the pubs. But I see lads coming over to a football match there, and they'll be shouting for Man United or Liverpool. But if that were then plays for England, they won't shout for him. They don't want to know him.
This is the thing. No. It's a peculiar Irish thing. I mean, do you feel in any way English at all then, Kevin?
No, apart from the accent. But there's people say you never change your accent. But my mother and father was in Leeds for over 60 years. They never changed their accents. So why should I? You've got to keep something. I love being Irish. I'm proud to be Irish. I'm proud to be called Irish. But I'm not going to change my accent, because then I would end with an accent that doesn't sound like anyone.
Kevin, you know, don't, whatever you do, change that accent. It is an absolutely lovely accent. I love it.
I've had this accent now for nearly 70 years, so I'm going to keep it for the rest, I think.
Wow. you don't sound like you're heading in that direction age-wise, Kevin. You're still driving, and you've no intention of packing it in.
Well, I got the license for the next 2 years till 26, and I've got the car, so I'm just tipping around at the moment. I'm retired, like, or I'm retirement age, but I'm only tipping around. I'm only getting out and about.
Kevin, it was lovely talking to you.
And thank you. I just want. So the point about this is that we cannot just get into the taxi rank in Carlow. It's not just night time, it's daytime as well. And it's getting an impossibility.
And obviously people need to earn their living.
Yeah, that's what this was all about. Like, it's just letting us get into the taxi rank. But we can't talk. Nobody seems to want to know. So we're at a loose end, because we're at a dead end. Nobody will listen to us.
Okay, we'll put that out there.
Okay.
Kevin, thank you. Thank you for that. Good talking to you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, we were talking to Sarah at the start of the programme about moving her family down to Cork, and... the issues, you know, and her issue was getting a childcare place. But we've had other callers on talking about the issues that they have moving home to Ireland from abroad. Am I going to go to Kelvin now? Kelvin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Kelvin, you just moved back to Ireland from?
We moved back from Tasmania on the 29th of February.
Right, yeah. And how is it going for you?
It's going absolutely terrible.
Right.
To say the least. We're actually thinking about going back because things are shocking here.
Really? So what are your main issues? So yourself, you're originally from where?
I'm originally from Derry, yeah.
And so you would have left a long... When did you take out...
I left in 1974 during the Troubles, because of the Troubles.
Because of the Troubles?
Yes.
You were a young man at that stage?
I was 18-year-old, yeah. I moved to Australia.
And just to be clear, you weren't involved in any way, Kelvin?
Not at all. No. Not at all. We moved to Australia, and then I moved to Tasmania. And then I've always had an inkling. I love Ireland. I love its people. And I wanted to come back and live here.
Right.
So the main problem I'm having is with the NDLS, the licensing people. They want me to prove I passed my test 52 years ago.
Oh. And so you passed your test in Derry before you left?
That's correct, yes. And then I moved to Australia, changed my license to an Australian one, which I've been driving for 54 years. And I've got no blemishes on my record or anything like that here. And all of a sudden I come to Ireland, and I thought it was just a simple matter of changing over the license. And here we go. I've been through a right rigmarole, including a health test and everything else, which I've passed. But, and also finding a doctor here is impossible, Donegal. And also, insurance is through the roof. I was quoted $3,400 for third-party insurance.
Oh, yeah. The insurance is an issue that comes up a lot. And the GP, of course, another issue that comes up a lot. We know that a lot of GPs have their lists full now and they're not able to take on any more.
That's correct. But the worst one's the driver's licence. If I don't get my driver's licence, I'm going to have to go back to Australia.
And am I right in thinking you actually drove trucks for some time in Australia?
I drove trucks in Australia, a 30-tonne truck. And then I changed my licence down just to a 15-tonne truck as well. And I've been driving without any problems all that time. And so, if I thought I was going to have these problems like with the license, I wouldn't have come to Ireland.
And where are you based now? Do you need to drive from where yes. You're now based?
I'm based in Dunloe, about three or four kilometres outside of Dunloe, and a place called Siskinner Road. Siskinner Road, yeah.
And how are you managing?
Well, we bought an old house. We're renovating at the moment. And if I don't get my licence, I'm going to be absolutely stuffed.
But how are you moving around at the moment? Like, how are you getting in and out from town and that?
Okay, I've got my licence up until next Friday, as far as I know, from the NDLS. I got my authorisation my licence validated from Australia, which I've done. I've had my medical, which I've done. Yeah, it's just a nightmare. They say welcome to Ireland, but if this is the welcome you're going to get from from the government, that's shocking. Absolutely shocking.
And what have they told you specifically is the problem with if you have a licence recognised in another country?
What they're saying now, I have to prove that my licence in Derry, which I took when I was 17, I had to prove I passed it. But the records only go back to 1985. So they've told me it's impossible to get them records.
And so is this because they didn't digitise the records, or the records are somewhere?
Yeah, that's correct. They're not on computer. Yeah, from before then. Yeah, but yeah. Look, I love Ireland. I've always dreamt about coming back and being here. We've got a beautiful, beautiful place here. The Irish people are gorgeous. The neighbours are beautiful. But the government's crap. Sorry.
Kelvin, I've just got a statement in here from the RSA and the NDLS, the Driver's License Service.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that they say this, the exchange of foreign driving license for an Irish driving license is governed by legislation. You know that at this stage.
Of course, yeah.
They say that if the competent driving license authority, in your case, the Australian driving license authority,
yes,
confirms that the person completed a test in a vehicle with manual transmission, the driving license granted on exchange shall also permit the person to drive a vehicle with manual transmission. They're saying where you've made a driving license exchange application, once you have declared you are normally resident in Ireland, the recognised state driving license and the recognised state driving license will not be returned to you. This is the most important line. The driver referred to will be contacted by the National Driving License Service and given an update on the Irish driving license that will issue to him. So that sounds like you might be in luck here. You might be about to be issued.
Well, if I'm in luck, it's just thanks to people like you and you know, yeah. I hope so, because obviously my wife's Chinese, and she's very upset about this matter. I'm upset about this matter. It shouldn't come to this. We would not in Australia treat the Irish people coming to Australia, you know, the way they've treated us. Yeah, do you know what I mean? We don't do that in Australia.
We'll keep in touch with you, Kelvin, to make sure this comes off for you. But hopefully we'll get you on the road before too long if this statement is true.
Yeah. Your program's beautiful. I've never heard of you before until a friend suggested, you know, because I've only been here in just over 2 months, you see. And we love it here. We love it.
Okay,
we'll stay here.
Well, hopefully we've two regular Liveline listeners now to add to the long list of Liveline listeners. Kelvin,
of course, Casey.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm going to try and squeeze in Dara before we go. Dara, good afternoon.
Katie, good afternoon. And everybody in Ireland knows Liveline.
Well, Kelvin knows us now too. You're a taxi driver as well, Dara.
I am down here in Cove in County Cork, and I was listening to your chat with Kevin and Carlo, and a lot of what he said I resonated with. I've been involved in this game for over 20 years, and I've loved it. But unfortunately, the way things have gone, sometimes it's very difficult when you pull into a rank. I would have always said in the past, you know, I could negotiate with people who have drink taken. That's not a problem. But unfortunately, such as the prevalence of other substances out there, sometimes it's very difficult to negotiate with people. So a lot of the time, taxi drivers will keep the doors locked and they'll just drive on by. And I think that's so sad.
They'll pick and choose. And we only half a minute left, Dara, but I believe you're a great singer.
Nah, it's been said.
Go on, give us a blast to sing us out from the show today.
And a big shout out as well to Bambi Tug for Saturday night.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
When I was young and I was in my day, sure I'd steal what woman's heart there was away, but I'd sing into the dawning, song ablaze into the morning, long before I was the man you see today.
Gorgeous, Dara. That's what a party piece from somebody in my family. If he's out there, he knows who he is. Thank you for that. On sound today, we had Ruth Kennington. Our broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin. And today's programme was produced by Hilary Jones. Stand by for Ray.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Revamp your home this May with our fresh new curtain and bedding designs. Discover comfort and style for every room.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.